Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Paige Panzarello is the cash flow chick. Having been a real estate investor and entrepreneur for almost 25 years, Paige has experienced many facets of real estate investing. Her experience includes founding and running her own residential and commercial construction and acquisition companies, buy and hold residential and commercial real estate investing, tax deeds, lien investing, fix and flip, and other forms, to name a few. She has been focusing on purchasing non-performing notes, though, since 2014, and has been successful in completing over $150 million in real estate transactions to date. Paige, welcome to the show.
Oh, Sam, so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure's mine. This is going to be fun.
Absolutely.
Non-performing note. You know, people hear about that stuff, and it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and I look forward to talking about that. But I've got the same three questions I ask everybody who comes on the show quickly. Where did you start? Where are you now? How did you get there?
Mine is an interesting story into real estate. I did not choose real estate. Real estate chose me. At a very young age, I was kind of thrown into the deep end of the swimming pool. I had a grandmother that passed away, and she had a very large estate that was severely in debt. But we had holdings in Arizona and California. And so off to Arizona, I went to try and figure out if I could salvage, you know, these holdings that she had that were so in debt. And at the time, Sam, you know, this is 25 years ago. So yes, I started when I was 10. Just kidding. At the time, there was no podcasting. There was barely, you know, at the internet at the time. So I had to surround myself with people that had answers to the questions that I was asking. Now, we had 38 townhome units, a sewer treatment plant, and some land. And all of it, again, was severely in debt. Fast forward, I kind of was able to work with a lot of people, bring the units that were broken of the 38 townhome units that were broken and vacant. I was able to fix them. So I was fixing and flipping before I even knew what I was doing. And I brought them to 100% capacity. But because we were in a really small market, I realized that we were not going to be able to sustain profitability. So I went to my family and I said, listen, you know, we're not going to be able to sustain this, even though we're profitable now in these townhome units. So I want to sell them and I want to build on the land. And in the middle of all that, we sold the sewer treatment plant as well. And my family just decided, you know what? I don't want to do with anything to do with that. But I was young and fearless and bold at the time. I could risk everything, right? And so I said, okay, I want to buy the company. Which I did. So I bought the company. I sold off all the 38 townhome units. I leveraged that money and I started building on the land. I realized very quickly that the contractor was going to bankrupt me before I was even coming out of the ground. And so I fired him and I started my own construction company, knowing nothing about construction. But again, I surrounded myself with the people that I needed to. I brought in a qualifying party, a partner into my corporation. The corporation held all of our licenses. And within 3 years, we were up and running. We were building our own projects, everybody else's projects. And I was making money hand over fist. Now, again, I started with zero knowledge, but I asked lots of questions and I just immersed myself in it, right? And I was really putting myself in an early grave because I was working 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. I had a crew of 36. Like I said, we were just rocking and rolling and I was making money, but my health was suffering. My relationships were suffering. And then the crash of 2007 came, 2007, 2008. And I thought, oh, it's not going to happen to me because I'm only 10% leveraged, right? I have all these assets and I have these relationships with lenders and it's not going to happen to me. Boy, Sam, I was wrong. That crash happened right on top of my head. And I'll tell you, it was horrible going through it at the time. I chose not to file bankruptcy like was my legal right. And a lot of other people did. People owed me money, lots of it. And they all filed bankruptcy. But, you know, I was very fortunate because I had taken the money that I was making and rolled it into cash flowing assets. So I had a lot of assets. I had a lot of liquidity. Long story short, I fire sailed everything. I paid off everybody I owed money to. And at the end of the day, 3 years later, I walked out of Arizona having literally lost everything to the tune of $20 million. Now, I say all of that because that brought me you know, I don't want to be cavalier about that. That was a very difficult learning experience for me, but it shaped who I am as an investor. It shaped where I put my money. It shaped how I treat money and how I treat other people. So it was a massive learning experience for me, and it really brought me to where I am today. So I wouldn't change a thing. But that being said, it brought me, when I came back into real estate, I had to build up my portfolio again, right? So I did the typical thing that everybody does, go into fixing and flipping and, you know, start gaining capital. But all the while I started learning about notes. And I've discovered that it's really good to be the bank. And that's what you are when you become a note holder or a note investor. You literally become somebody's bank. So I'm in a position where I can mitigate my risk. I can have above average returns on my money. I get to help people. And all of that is because of where I was and how I got to where I am now and investing in non-performing notes.
That's fascinating. Let's, before we dig in on the note side of things, what, you know, the term you had used was shaped. You said it shaped who you were as an investor. Give us maybe two or three things that you would say that these were the things that that experience shaped.
Yeah. So when I started out telling my story, I said I was young, I was bold, I was fearless, right? I could risk a whole lot. Now, as I've grown and as I've been successful and gained, you know, a lot of money and now, you know, had to build it back up, I choose where to spend my time, because my time is very, very valuable. That's our most valuable asset. That's the one thing we can never get back, is our time. So I choose to spend my time wisely. I don't want to work 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. It affects your health and your relationships. So your time. So it shaped how I choose to spend my time. It shaped how I am in terms of my risk. I really had to have a meeting with myself and sit down and say, okay, you're not where you were, you know, 20 whatever years ago. So what are your tolerances? And I really had to have that meeting with myself. And I discovered that where I was bold and fearless when I first started, I'm pretty bold now, but I'm not necessarily fearless. And that might sound silly, but I went through a pretty horrific experience. And so I choose to make educated decisions of what my risk tolerances are and where I'm going to place my time and my most valuable asset and my hard-earned dollars. So those are just a couple. There's many more, but I'm sure we don't have time for that.
No, you're right. We probably don't, but I love hearing those sorts of things, because that gives, you know, some, maybe I'm going to call it softer, but they're not, because they're hard-earned lessons, right?
Like, yes.
Some of those softer skills that you go, okay, you know, how did this affect me? How does it change who I am as a person today? And how can other people either learn from my mistakes or adjust their current, you know, course, you know, based upon what they hear you say?
Absolutely.
I think those are some of the things that I really enjoy hearing about, you know, that help us as investors. Let's talk about non-performing notes, because that's what you do right now. It's not a topic we do a lot of discussion on this show about. Walk us through NPNs. You know, walk us through what your business looks like. What type of non-performing notes do you guys invest in? You know, just kick it off and start running with it. And I'm sure I'll come with a couple of questions along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So non-performing notes in general, basically a note is basically just a promise to pay. Okay. Now, there are many different kinds of notes that you can invest in. I choose first position, which means I'm the first to get paid. First position, non-performing notes secured by real estate. And it sounds crazy to invest in non-performing notes, but there's a method to my madness. And the reason that I do non-performing is that I'm able to buy those notes that promise to pay, right? That's secured by the real estate, meaning it's collateralized. So I'm mitigating risk. I choose to buy the non-performers because I buy them at a very big discount, and it builds in a margin of equity immediately from the get-go. And it also gives me a little bit of leverage to be able to work with my borrower. My ultimate ideal outcome, exit strategy, is that I get to work with my borrower to get them re-performing again, meaning the non-performing, they've stopped paying their mortgage. But I get to work with them to get them performing again and give them a second chance. And I get to make money while helping people. So that just checks all my boxes for me. But notes are again, you can buy them on real estate, you can buy them on cars, you can buy credit card debt. I choose to focus on securing my investment and my time, right, with real estate backed notes, real estate backed promises to pay. The other cool thing is that you literally become the bank. And it is good to be the bank. You are the one that is in control. You make almost all of the decisions. In note investing, we have 23 different exit strategies so we can mitigate our risk. I spend $0 marketing for my deals. None. They come directly to my inbox for free. How I spend my time and my money is networking with people. That's how I get my deals. I don't send out yellow letters. I don't knock on doors. I don't call people. None of that. I just network with the right people and the deals come to my inbox for free. And I get to help other investors, you know, generate more money for themselves and their family while helping people. So for me, it's just angels sang when I got to this space.
That's awesome. I love that. Is there a particular asset class inside of real estate that you focus on?
Yeah. So, I mean, most investors like myself, when we start out in note investing, we start out focusing on residential, most of us, not all of us, but there are branches. You can branch out into multifamily. You can branch out into commercial, industrial, land. There's so many different opportunities that are available, especially with note investors, because again, we're getting our deals directly from the bank that's selling that promise to pay that's backed by real estate, right? So we kind of have the first shot at it. And like everybody else, when I started to scale, I started from residential real estate note-backed notes and moved on to, you know, multifamily, commercial, industrial, et cetera. Now, I prefer to stick with the residential and the commercial. There are some multifamily that come in, which is very exciting when they do. But I will tell you that it is just like anything else. You kind of have to pay your dues as you scale and as you grow.
Right. Yeah, I can only imagine that you do. Why does a bank deal with you versus just selling to the big players in the space?
There's some of both. Okay. So for instance, I am not in a position yet, and I may never be, and that would be okay, to be honest, but I'm not in a position to deal directly with the big, you know, the big boys, Wells Fargo, Chase Bank, all Bank of America. You literally need to be able to take down hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars worth of a pool of notes. Okay. But I do buy from the hedge funds that are in that position. So what will happen is they will buy the, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of notes. They will take what is in their buy box. That's a note term. What's your buy box? It's kind of the criteria of what you're looking for in your real estate deals, right? So they will keep whatever they like, and then they'll sell off the rest to another hedge fund or to somebody like myself. The reason that they do that is pretty lengthy, but for a couple really quick ones. Number one, banks are publicly traded, right? They have shareholders. And when they're carrying bad debt, it does not look good on their books. Further, they are regulated by the federal government in terms of how they conduct a foreclosure, and it's very costly for them. The costs are not the same for us as individual note investors or hedge fund investors, okay? That's number one. Number two is that banks have to hold federal depositories, which big banks, you know, that originate notes are, they have to hold in reserve anywhere between $3 to $10 per dollar that they lend out to an end user. So if they make a $100,000 loan, then they're going to have anywhere between $300,000 and $1 million cash reserves set aside. They can't use that money. So when a note becomes non-performing, not only are they not making money for the loan, but they're also, they've tied up a bunch of money in cash reserves. So it behooves them to move that, to release those cash reserves so they can lend to somebody else.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So how do you get in front of the hedge funds and people like that? I mean, just not every day you're like, oh, hedge fund phone number. Hi, my name's Paige. You got anything you want to sell?
It sounds pretty daunting, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, I can just imagine them going, yeah, uh-huh. And then the phone hanging up. So what does that look like?
You'd be really surprised. Okay. Number one, I will say this, that banks and I call them all, I lump them into the same kind of nickname. They're all asset managers to me. I deal with banks. I deal with hedge funds. I deal with brokers. I deal with other note investors. I just call them asset managers. Okay. So asset managers do not care if you are new. They do care that you sort of have an idea of what you're doing meaning that you educate yourself, because they don't want to waste their most valuable asset, which is their time. They don't care if you're new. They just want to know that you're going to close. This space is very reputation-based. So if you say you're going to do something, then please do it. Because if you're just a tire kicker, they don't want to, you know, nobody wants to deal with a tire kicker. All of us, it's not exclusive to the note space, right? We want to deal with people that are going to perform, and asset managers in the note space are no different than that. So how do you get in front of them? You network with them. You go to conferences. There are note conferences all over the country. There are note subgroups that are popping up. There's one. I often speak at it. It's called the Paper Source Symposium. It's held once a year. It's the last couple of years have been virtual because of our situation, but it's in Las Vegas. And that's a great place to start for new note investors, because there's a lot of education. There's no selling at all, which is nice. And there are asset managers there. And it's fun because other asset managers will introduce you to other asset managers. There's online platforms. I mean, everywhere you can find a deal for any type of real estate is the same for in the note space to get in front of asset managers, believe it or not.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, I would think that bridging that gap would be a lot harder than it is, but it sounds like it's just one of those things where you go do it and that's the way it works out. What sort of liquidity requirements? I mean, buying a note means you got to have cash on hand. How do you finance these transactions, especially your larger ones? And what sort of timeline do you have to take those down?
Yeah. So the answer is it depends. Like anything though, Sam, you know, I mean, there are ways that you can utilize other people's money. Just like in buying real estate or buying multifamily, you can use other people's money to take down assets, or you can use your own, you can joint venture. I've done all of that. I'm currently in the process of starting my own fund, but you know, you do, if I had to say there was a con, you know, pick a con about notes or note investing, that is the biggest obstacle. And I don't think it's exclusive to notes. I think that's, you know, pretty much people look for deals and money, money and deals and money, right? Same thing with notes, but you cannot finance a note. You have to have cash. So either you have to have your own cash, you have to joint venture with somebody else. You can participate in somebody's fund. Like I said, there are some that are out there, myself included, I'm building one, and it scales. So if you're the big hedge fund that is going to buy from Wells Fargo, you're going to need hundreds of millions, if not $1 billion, right? But if you're going to be just buying one-offs or cherry picking a tape is just basically an Excel spreadsheet with all the assets that are for sale. If you're just going to buy one or two, then you can have your own cash or joint venture with somebody or use somebody else's money. Same thing.
Right. And that becomes, you know, in most things in real estate, you got two things you need, money and deals, right?
Right.
It sounds like for you, you've got the deal side covered. Like it just, like you said, they at this point, you've networked enough. The deals come to you. Liquidity is the issue. And one of the attractive things about real estate, of course, is the leverage, which in your case, because you're becoming the bank, there is no, you just can't leverage it. I mean,
not at this level, not at this level. There are other hedge funds that do leverage, but we're talking, you know, much higher levels. Yes.
Right. Understood. Yeah. No, that's fantastic. When you review 2007 to 2010 for you, and now you review where we are sitting right now, I mean, is it any better necessarily to be the one holding the note if everything hits the proverbial fan and, you know, you're basically just on the other end of the equation, but still without cash coming in? How do you protect your downside risk were that event to happen again?
Yeah. So it is great to be the bank. Okay. You're holding all the cards. You are in the power seat. You're in the power position as long as you are secured, right? Because if you buy credit card debt, that's unsecured. I buy debt that is secured by real estate. So if my borrower stops performing, then I have 23 different exit strategies available to me, you know, to work out with the borrower or to ultimately, you know, my least favorite exit strategy is to have to foreclose on the home and take the home from them. There are other investors that that's all they do. That's how they invest in notes. And I would prefer, I'm hope that they buy notes on vacant properties, so they're not kicking people out of their homes, right? But how I hedge against that is, remember when I said I buy non-performing?
Sure.
And I buy it at a very big discount. So because I buy it at a big discount, as you remember in 2007, 2008, prices just bottomed out. I mean, home value just went into the toilet. And I think, you know, we've been on such a big climb, as you know, Sam. I mean, a lot of us in this space are, all of us real estate investors are looking for that correction to happen, because it's going to. It's already starting, right? COVID has kind of stepped in, and the government put some moratoriums also, you know, they're preventing foreclosures. Those are ending if they haven't already. They're ending by the end of this month. We're seeing a huge uptick in foreclosures and process getting started. But how do I hedge against that is that because I'm buying at such a discount, even if the values drop, let's say the values drop by 40%, which historically, not even in 2008, historically has never happened in less than 6 months. It might be a progression, but it historically has never happened in 6 months. But let's say it does. Let's say, you know, the earth opens up and something happens, and we home values across the board drop by 40%. Because I buy generally anywhere between 55 and it's starting to go down, by the way, between 55 and 62 has been where I've been buying these notes based on value, not on the principal balance of the note, but on the value of the securing collateral. So because I buy them anywhere between 55 and 62 cents on the dollar, if we dropped 40%, I'm still okay. I'm at break even pretty much, right? So I have, and because I have 23 different exit strategies, I can hedge and mitigate against that risk. I might have to choose a different exit strategy than I was planning, you know, to prevent any loss, but I'm in a catbird seat to be able to move in and pivot if things like that happen to prevent and hedge against that loss.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And, you know, of course, you know, like you said, the biggest value there is the buying at a discount.
Yes.
You know, that's your biggest downside protector, I guess, if you will. Talk to us about two things. We're almost out of time, but I can't help but ask. Maybe tell us the most bizarre note you ended up buying and maybe the most fun one that you've done.
I always have fun when I'm able to be successful in keeping a family in their home. So I literally, out of every 10 notes, about a third of them will end up in a foreclosure situation, which is my least fun. A third will end up in either a short sale or a deed in lieu situation where the borrower is vacating their home. And a third will end up in a reperforming situation. So my most fun is being able to work with families. I try very hard, especially when it's like a single parent situation. They've got kids in the home. I've been very successful doing that where I'm able to reposition their loan. And we basically internally, but on the books, refi their loan. So they get to start over. We can forgive some debt, right? We don't have to, but we can. And then I get a little chunk of cash as a good faith deposit, you know, and so I create a chunk of cash and then they cash flow. So they pay their monthly mortgage every month. We set them up to succeed, not to fail. We've got happy borrowers with happy kids in their home. And I'm the happy investor as the bank because I generated a chunk of cash and a stream of monthly cash flow. And they don't call me when the air conditioning breaks because I'm their bank, not their landlord.
Right.
Right.
Right. Understood. Understood. Yes. I completely understand that. And I've used that line several times. It's like, I'm your bank, not your landlord. So
yeah.
I like that. Let's go. Last question then. Most bizarre thing that you ended up buying. What does that sound like to you?
Yeah. So there's always risk in anything that you do. And some of these borrowers know how to milk the system. They really do. And I review this in my workshop. There's one note that I was very excited about. I didn't end up ultimately buying it, largely because our due diligence steps that we take prior to the purchase of the note are so extensive, it prevented this. It would have been a loss for me. This woman literally declared herself free from the Constitution. She is her own island. This is in Chicago, by the way. Her house was a beautiful duplex and a beautiful area that was being gentrified. It was just a phenomenal, the profit potential was off the charts. But she had been in foreclosure for 7 years and literally declared herself her own island. And not, she wasn't beholden to the law. And that was probably in 4 years ago. And I still check on that note. She's still in the house. So I, very bizarre, to look at the recorded documents. Yeah, you'd be surprised. To look at the recorded documents, it's quite funny. Very, very bizarre, but I'm very happy I did not buy that note, but that's because of good due diligence.
Wow. That's, yeah. So now that, so make that 11 years, that takes professional tenant to a, to an unthinkable level. And it sounds like she's got it figured out. So
she does. She absolutely does.
Whatever her systems are and whatever's going on, wherever she's living in Chicago, hopefully she keeps those tricks under wraps, because that's,
yes,
we don't need that out of the bag here in the real estate industry. My gosh, that's wild. Exactly. Paige, I've enjoyed this. Here we go. Final four questions. If I gave you $20,000 to invest in real estate and you had no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
You know, Sam, this question can be a hard one, because honestly, what's good for me is not necessarily good for somebody else.
It's still your answer.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I would say, obviously I love notes. I really do. But you have to educate yourself. There are some pitfalls, just like anything else. So if you're, for me, it's notes. I do really like multifamily syndications. So I think I would probably go in that direction. But again, really sit down and discover what your what is as an investor. What do you need right now? What does that look like? What are your risk tolerances? And then go in that direction so you can get there.
Got it. It's a great answer. Question number two is this, and let's keep this answer as it pertains to notes. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in note investing, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Lack of education, hands down. Don't get into FOMO, everybody. There's a lot of shiny objects that are out there, notes included. Okay. Don't have that fear of missing out. So educate yourself. There's always going to be opportunity in real estate and real estate investing. Always. People are accustomed to living in homes. So there's always going to be opportunities, some better than others, but don't get ahead of the game. Make sure you're educated. Make sure you know how to mitigate your risk and spend your money wisely, because that the FOMO is where you and if you're not educated, that's how you make mistakes.
Right. I love that. Question number three, Paige. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
I'm so blessed and so fortunate. I just gave an example a little bit ago. I get to go across the country and help distressed homeowners that haven't been able to pay their mortgage, and nobody has cared. The big banks, they don't care. Every single day, get to help homeowners stay in their home, give them a second chance, get back on track, make money for my investors with above average returns, make money for myself with above average returns, have time for my family and friends. All of that is wrapped into notes and note investing, and I'm just blessed.
That's fantastic. Last question. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yes. Okay. So a couple different things. Cashflowchick.com, as you can see, I'm the Cashflow Chick. So if you want to talk with me, you can book right on my calendar, right from that website, cashflowchick.com. If you're interested in learning about notes and how to do notes and note investing, go to buildingwealthwithnotes.com. And my workshop is actually coming up. So I only hold 2 a year because I'm an active note investor, but I do like to pass it forward and teach everybody how to do this, because I love for people to become financially free. We've got a lot going on, Sam, as you know, in these days, and with COVID and unemployment, and I just love to teach people financial freedom and how they can get themselves out of the rat race and be able to live their life the way on their terms.
That's fantastic. Paige, thank you so much for your time today. I've certainly enjoyed it.
Thank you, Sam. I've enjoyed it as well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen,
If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.